Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You could use the shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast. But it's simpler to use a computer or a smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past five shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, NHK Japan, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with France 24. In a report from Monday, Oxfam West Bank policy lead Bushra Khalidi describes the situation in northern Gaza. Oxfam and other relief agencies have not been able to assist anyone in Gaza since the 1st of October. Palestinians are being bombed and starved to death while being told to move to safe areas that are not safe. They have nowhere to go. Bushra accuses the international community of complicity in the deaths and suffering. Then press reviews from Tuesday on Netanyahu and the timing for the plan to escalate the war before the U.S. election. Amazon, Google, and other tech giants are buying and building nuclear power plants in the United States to supply the need of artificial intelligence servers. France 24.
An Israeli airstrike has killed at least 20 people at a school in central Gaza on Sunday night. The school in question had been sheltering people already displaced by the war there. And more explosions reported in the early hours of this Monday, notably outside a hospital in Deir al-Bala. That latest strike hitting a tent that, as you can see, went quickly up in flames. Meanwhile, getting some vital fuel, blood and essential medicine into hospitals in Gaza, the World Health Organization says it has now managed to get some supplies in. A one-off mission, however, far from meeting the necessary requirements, with the few remaining hospitals in Gaza totally overwhelmed as bombs continue to fall. Well, to get the latest picture on the situation there, we can speak to West Bank policy lead for Oxfam, Bushra Khalidi. Thanks so much for your time. We're hearing once again more strikes overnight, people in northern Gaza being told to move south. But, you know, can you give us the latest you're hearing on the situation there for people in Gaza?
In the last 24 hours, what we've heard is people have burnt alive in displaced tents in Al-Aqsa Hospital in the northern part of Gaza. We are hearing that Jabalia, Beit Hanun areas in the north of the northern governorates is being completely leveled. People are besieged. People are sending us goodbye messages. People are tweeting their goodbyes on to the world to see, saying you might not hear from us again because we're besieged and we can't move and we can't leave our homes and we have nothing left, in like no water, no food left. We've not been able to enter any aid to the north as Oxfam for the last month, and there has been no aid entering at all the north since the 1st of October. Water is not running in the north because there's no more fuel, and Israel has denied fuel allocations to the northern parts of the northern governorates. We've heard yesterday of kids being completely massacred in Shatit refugee camp. And we saw, you know, rows of children, killed as young as 2-1 years old. And yesterday as well, and this morning in Nusayrat and Deir al-Balah as well, schools were targeted and hit. I mean, it's just absolute horror. I mean, people are burning to crisp and the world is silent. It's unbelievable. We could not believe. Every day I wake up not believing that it could get worse. And yet today, I think I've seen some of the worst images I've seen in the last 12 months in Gaza.
Indeed, we're seeing it. And yet it's still hard to imagine the reality on the ground for these people. As you were saying, we're over a year into this offensive now. Oxfam being blocked then getting simple food and essential supplies even in, blocked by Israel on the border?
So there's almost 500,000 people still in the north. We're unable to get to the north whatsoever, whether through the northern crossings. For a month for Oxfam and for all humanitarian aid organizations into the northern parts of the northern Gardavernurates since the 1st of October, including WFP. People are literally going to either die of starvation or die from an Israeli bomb. That is where we're at with the Beit Hanun and Jabalia and Beit Lahia areas in the north. Our colleagues that are in Gaza City can literally see the north parts smoke bellowing out of, you know, the destroyed buildings, and can have been, you know, the entire northern part of Gaza has been shaking from the amount of bombs that have been dropped in the last week on the northern parts.
And Israel saying that it's going back into the north because Hamas has regrouped and is reoperating in the north. It's telling people to move south. Is there a safe place in Gaza?
There's absolutely no safe place in Gaza. And this is why 500,000 people are not leaving, because where are they going to go to? Our colleagues refuse to leave, because to where? To go where? To stay on top of rubbles, in pollution, in sewage in the south, where there's barely enough food, or you're eating, surviving on canned food and in with no sanitation system, no civilian infrastructure, no real dignified life. Why would they leave their homes at this point and out a year later where, you know, Israel has evacuated, forcibly displaced over the entire population of Gaza? Why would people believe Israeli authorities at this stage? Clear that its strategy is not working. It's been 12 months that they've been saying exactly the same thing. And people are trapped in a place. This is the problem in Gaza. This is why it's so peculiar and unique to any other conflict, is that people have nowhere to go. They are trapped in an enclave because Israel control all of the borders and will not let people go and flee for their safety, because there is no safety, because they are bombing the entire strip at all times.
Indeed, even the so-called humanitarian safe zones have also been hit, of course, by Israeli strikes.
This is designated a humanitarian safe zone by Israeli authorities. It is not a humanitarian safe zone. That does not look like a humanitarian safe zone, where you don't have any civilian infrastructure, you don't have water, you don't have electricity, you're unable to reach the affected communities. We can barely operate. It's not a humanitarian safe zone. It's a wasteland where people are just piling up and crammed into the smallest strip of land with absolutely no infrastructure, living in sand, and potentially being bombed, because safe zones have been bombed for the entire last 12 months. So there's no such thing as safe zones in Gaza.
And tell me, you are Oxfam. It's an international organization. Are you getting any international support? What do you make of this international reaction?
The international community is complicit, because they are not taking actions. This ICJ advisory opinion that came out in July is very clear, actually. It sets out very, very specific measures that third states should be taking to prevent further atrocities happening in Gaza and to prevent the illegality, the occupation to endure on Palestinian people. And we have not seen meaningful action from any third states and Israel's allies. And on the contrary, it seems like, you know, they've been supporting this and green-lighting this and not really putting any red lines on anything in Gaza. And in fact, they risk to be complicit in Israel's atrocity crimes that they're carrying out in Gaza. That is what the international community has done. We've seen a few allies, but really those that have influence have not met their obligations under international law to hold Israel accountable in any meaningful way.
Do you see any of that changing?
As long as you let Israel's impunity foster and fester, we warned of the regional escalation. We've been saying it from the beginning that if this continues, it will spill over beyond Gaza's borders, and now it has. And we've said if you don't enforce a ceasefire, then it will spill over, and this is what we've seen. So as long as we don't end Israel's impunity and we don't hold perpetrators of atrocity crimes accountable, this will continue.
Bushra Khalidi there, West Bank Policy Lead for Oxfam International. We're going to start with a Washington Post exclusive on a phone call between Benjamin Netanyahu and Joe Biden.
Yeah, this is a Washington Post exclusive this morning, as you say, with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu telling the US that Israel will only strike Iranian military targets, not oil or nuclear sites. Washington seeing this as a sign of restraint after fears of an attack which could have provoked a wider war. An Israeli strike on Iranian oil facilities could have sent energy prices soaring, something which Washington was certainly very worried about. And an attack on the country's nuclear research program could risk further escalation, with the US getting more of a military role. So this all comes from, as you say, a phone call between Netanyahu and Joe Biden last week that the Washington Post have got the details of. And according to this, the Israeli PM was in a more moderated place in that discussion than he had previously been. The apparent softening of the Prime Minister's stance factored into Biden's decision to send a powerful missile defence system to Israel. One Israeli official close to the PM said that they would continue to consult with the US ahead of Israel's planned strike on Iran, but they would not wait for a green light from Washington. In the 2 weeks since Iran's latest missile barrage on Israel, the Middle East has braced for that promised response. So when will that be? Well, Haaretz have this headline this morning, reporting that the Israelis will strike before the November the 5th US elections. This comes from that same phone conversation between Netanyahu and Biden. According to sources, a lack of response would be interpreted by Iran as a sign of weakness, adding that this will just be the first in a series of responses. Another point from this report, Netanyahu told Biden that he intends to wrap up operations in Lebanon in the coming weeks, making the point that it's a conflict that he really doesn't want to drag out.
So Amazon has become the latest tech giant to seek clean energy from nuclear reactors.
Yeah, the emergence of artificial intelligence and the need for more and more data centers means that the tech industry is using more and more energy, and it's under pressure to commit to clean energy. This Wednesday, Amazon said it would invest $500 million in nuclear power. It announced deals with Dominion Energy in Virginia and a separate one with X Energy Reactor. Amazon had already bought a data center powered by the Susquehanna nuclear power plant earlier this year. Just 2 days ago, Google's parent company Alphabet announced a similar deal with Kairos Power. Microsoft is also partnering with Constellation Energy to restart the nuclear power plant at Three Mile Island, which was closed after a partial meltdown back in 1979. All three of those tech giants have also been investing in solar and wind energy as well. The U.S. Energy Secretary hailed the latest announcement as an important step in reducing carbon emissions.
Those reports were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English. They're also available at most podcast sites. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. The U.S. military used a stealth bomber to attack numerous sites in Yemen as retaliation for Houthi attempts to support Palestinians. Marina Marone, military analyst from King's College London, discusses the significance of the deployment and what it may portend for the Israeli response to Iran and the region. International condemnation is growing over Israeli attacks on UN peacekeepers in southern Lebanon. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Well, the United States says it's conducted precision strikes on targets in Houthi-controlled areas of Yemen. The U.S. Central Command said it hit five targets in underground Houthi bunkers. Houthi militants have been attacking shipping in the Red Sea and launching drones at Israel after the Hamas terror attack sparked Israel's invasion of Gaza last year. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said in a statement that long-range B-2 stealth bombers were used in the attacks. Well, for more on this, let's bring in Marina Miron, military analyst at King's College London. Marina is joining us from Munich. Good to see you, Marina. So this is the first time the US has used the strategic stealth bomber to attack the Houthis in Yemen. To what extent may this be seen as an escalation?
What we have to understand is the fact that the US used the B-2 Spirit bombers as a molecule. They are not used very often. This is a first use since 2017. And these are nuclear capable bombers. We have to appreciate the significance of using such a stealth bomber to deliver the precision strike. It seems like an overkill because the Houthis do not have sophisticated air defenses, and this bomber is made to operate in a contested environment. Therefore, on the one hand, the US is showing its commitment to Israel, which ordnance was used to destroy those underground weapons storages, because it seems to be like a signal to Iran, and specifically to Iranian nuclear facilities, which are said to be located underground and are hardened targets. Therefore, a bomber with a range of 11,000 kilometers and the only one that is able to carry a massive ordnance penetrators in order to destroy such targets could be potentially engaged. So I think this is a sign to Iran after Israel's response, which are still being awaited. Iran has to choose carefully how they respond, because in the worst case scenario, the U.S. could go after Iranian nuclear facilities.
Marina, the U.S. is sending THAAD air defense systems and troops to Israel. It feels like something bigger might be at play.
Well, absolutely. Well, military speaking, of course, we have seen the two strikes that Iran has conducted on Israel. And it's not so much the sophistication of what Iran has used, but the actual amount and what it costs to shoot everything down to avoid damage. Therefore, deploying THAAD will strengthen Israeli layered air defense. And the U.S. perceives it as needed because, again, the U.S. is anticipating a potential Iranian response as a response to what is to come from the Israeli side, while at the same time trying to kind of navigate the murky waters and convince Israeli leadership not to target Iranian oil and nuclear facilities. On the other hand, we have to also understand that the U.S. has deployed its soldiers to Israel to operate this air defense system, which means that it will become trickier for Iran, because if there are any U.S. casualties as a result of its strike, this potentially could draw the U.S. into the war. And so we have these two components, again, as a strategic signaling to Iran in terms of U.S. readiness and U.S. capabilities and U.S. commitment to support Israel.
Now, the office of the Israeli Prime Minister has pushed back against media reports that Benjamin Netanyahu gave assurances to the US president about limiting its retaliation against Iran. Does Washington have any real leverage at this point?
Well, I think what we have seen so far is that U.S. is trying to demonstrate commitment to Israel in order also to have Netanyahu back down and choose a more proportionate response rather than going and all out, because I think there is this big fear of escalation that could involve the entire Middle East. And especially now, Iran has also been practicing a lot of diplomacy, coercive diplomacy, if you wish, against other Arab states to tell them not to let the U.S. Use their airspace for any kind of military operations. Mm. So I think that this is a sign to Israel as well as a potential attempt to tame Israel. Whether that will work, we don't know. It remains to be seen. But I think that Israel will still try to go for the maximum, even if it's short of targeting oil fields and nuclear facilities.
Thanks, Marina. Military analyst Marina Miron.
International condemnation is growing over Israel's attacks on United Nations peacekeepers in southern Lebanon. It follows a series of incidents, including accusations from the UN that an Israeli tank burst through the gates of a UNIFIL outpost. EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell says the attacks are, quote, completely unacceptable. Israel has demanded that the peacekeepers withdraw, claiming they're being used as human shields by Hezbollah militants.
Major international criticism has followed Israel's attacks on UNIFIL. At least five UN troops have been wounded. Israeli forces say Hezbollah operates near to UNIFIL, with this footage supposedly showing a Hezbollah weapons cache found less than 500 meters from the UN base. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Hezbollah was using UNIFIL as human shields and called on the UN force to leave the area.
Mr. Secretary General, get the UNIFIL forces out of harm's way. It should be done right now, immediately.
The UN has condemned the attacks on its peacekeepers and described them as a breach of international law.
Top European officials have condemned the Israeli attacks that injured the UN peacekeepers in southern Lebanon. The bloc's foreign ministers have been meeting in Luxembourg, and the conflict in the Middle East is high on their agenda. They rejected Israeli allegations that the UN was keeping its troops in Lebanon to obstruct military operations against Hezbollah. EU members agreed to ask Israel to stop its attacks on peacekeeping forces. Here's the EU foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, condemning the violence.
Many European members are participating in this mission. Their work is very important. It's completely unacceptable attacking United Nations troops. And I want to remind everybody that it's not the Secretary General of United Nations who decides about this mission staying or not staying. It's the Security Council who has to take this kind of decisions.
That was the EU foreign policy chief.
Those reports were from Germany's radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. They are also available at most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. On to NHK World Radio Japan. In North Korea, after drones from South Korea dropped propaganda leaflets, the North Koreans stationed artillery units near the border. Then a few days later, they destroyed roads in the area. NHK Japan.
North Korea's defense ministry says it has ordered artillery units near the border with South Korea to prepare for further drone invasions by the South. The ministry made the announcement on Sunday through the state-run Korean Central News Agency. It reiterated its claim that earlier this month, South Korea sent drones over the capital Pyongyang and released propaganda leaflets. The defense ministry said the general staff of the Korean People's Army gave the order on Saturday to artillery corps near the border. It also said that 8 artillery brigades had been ordered to be in what they call fire readiness positions by 8 p.m. Sunday local time. And air surveillance over Pyongyang had been enhanced. Kim Yo-jong, the sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, also issued a statement on Sunday. She stressed the need to immediately stop a recurrence of provocative acts that infringe on the other's territorial airspace. The South Korean military says it could not confirm whether the North's claims were true. It asked Pyongyang to exercise restraint and said it would retaliate if the safety of South Koreans is endangered.
South Korea's military says North Korea has blown up sections of roads connecting the countries. The blast occurred only on the northern side of the border, but tensions are growing between the neighbors. South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff said the North carried out the explosions at around noon on Tuesday. It said they occurred on inter-Korean roads in the eastern and western areas of the Korean Peninsula. South Korea's military said it did not suffer any damages or casualties, but fired warning shots on the southern side of the border as the North was continuing related work following the explosions. Many are wondering what's behind the blasts. One expert notes they came after the North changed its policy from viewing South Korea as a state to be peacefully reunited with to a hostile country.
North Korea has been advocating unification with South Korea for several decades. In order to completely deny that, in other words, to change the mind of the people, the North needs to repeatedly show its new stance with very strong words and symbolic events.
South Korea's military says it's stepping up vigilance of the North's actions in coordination with U.S. forces.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. On shortwave, they're heard at 10 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp and most podcast sites. All the times they announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this program, like a continuing supporter from Willits, California did this week, There is a link for online donations available at my website, outfarpress.com, or you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Many, many thanks to everyone who has ever helped keep this freely distributed show airborne. Please join them. And if you are listening through a public radio station, it's important that you support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Police arrested more than 200 Americans who were protesting in front of the New York Stock Exchange. They were demanding an end to U.S. support for the Israeli wars in Palestine and Lebanon. Radio Havana, Cuba.
U.S. police have arrested more than 200 pro-Palestinian protesters staging a sitting outside the New York Stock Exchange to demand an end to the U.S. support for Israel's genocidal actions in Gaza. Jewish Voice for Peace, a Jewish-led pro-Palestinian group, organized the protest in front of the iconic New York Stock Exchange building near Wall Street in Lower Manhattan. Just before the opening bell on Monday, the protesters in red shirts bearing Jews say, "Stop arming Israel and not in our name," chanting, "Up, up with liberation, down, down with occupation," calling for an end to funding the genocide. Many also chanted slogans against Israeli attacks in Lebanon, as well as American defense contractors and weapons manufacturers. The organizers said about 500 demonstrators attended the protest, and none of them entered the stock exchange, but several people made it past the police security fence outside the main building on Broad Street. A police spokesperson said 206 people were detained, without giving further details. The journalist was also arrested by the police, but she was released soon after. In Gaza, at least 42,289 people have been killed, while over 2,000 lives have been lost in Lebanon since October 7, 2023. Since October, the U.S. has provided Israel with $17.9 billion in military aid alone, according to a report published by Brown University's Watson Institute for International and Public Affairs.
That report was from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcasts. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You have to look even harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information to make an online donation. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm still recuperating from a spinal injury, so I'm staying in a house connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.